Good morning, everybody. It's great to see such a big house here, and I'm delighted to see so many men here as well, I have to say. Pardon me while I have a slug out of the bottle of water. Our title for this session is Women in Radio, Past, Present and Future. Now, that's a handful, and we're not going to cover all of that, excuse me. But I'm going to do something quite specific, which Fionnuala asked me to do, which is to talk for about 8 to 10 minutes about my own experience and about the past in RTE radio, which is where that experience was, only up onto the early 1980s. And thinking about it, I realised that the 1980s for some of you is like way back in the distant past. For me, it's yesterday in my head, but that's what I'm going to do. And one of my panellists will also do the same, and then we'll talk about the more recent past, the present and the future. Before I give my own little talk, I'll introduce my panellists. Beside me here, Dr. Rosemary Day. I marked all these in my book and now I can't find them. But most of you will know who Rosemary is, and she is an associate professor and senior lecturer in Mary Immaculate College, the University of Limerick. And she's written a lot about radio, and she has a book coming out in October, is it? Yeah, on 100 years of Irish radio. So it'll all be in there, and I think we're all looking forward very much to that. Patricia Messenger, anybody who's from Cork knows Patricia, I hope, because she's hosted C103's weekday show since 1990. And again, she probably thinks that's only yesterday, but it's not to some of you. She has had great recognition and awards for her work, and she's celebrated for her empathy, her community engagement and her humanitarian work, which is very important too. Next on my list I have Deirdre O'Shaughnessy, also from Cork, and if you read your Examiner you'd certainly know about Deirdre, and she also does a twice weekly podcast on subjects that are covered in the Examiner, but with more detail, and a most enjoyable podcast it is, the ones I've listened to. And then lastly, Sally Galliano, who's been involved in radio in Ireland. She joined Near FM in 1997, and she's produced series, and she has also been on the board of CRAIL and of various other organisations. So she has an overview of community radio, which will be interesting to hear about. So I'd like to start with 2RN, 1926, 100 years ago. And there were women employed in 2RN and heard on the air, but under different conditions to men, and they were expected in the main to deal with domestic matters. That's what it was. Woman Organiser and Relief Announcer was the title they gave to Mairéadh Ní Chraoda when she joined in 1926. She had to organise programmes for women and children, among other things. Now, she's probably best known to a lot of you as a dramatist. She wrote An Thriail, which some people would have studied at school. And Rosemary Day knows a lot more about her than I do, and she'll talk more about her later. Her successor as woman organiser was a woman called Kitty Roddy. Now, the problem with her was she was a married woman, so she could only be employed on a temporary basis, but that turned out to last 25 years. There are lots of others, and there isn't time to go into them, but in the first few years, broadcasts for women were mainly 10 or 15 minute talks. In 1936, for example, 1% of the station's output was listed as women's talks. And the 1939 annual report is very interesting because it describes these as concerning all the subjects dear to the homemaker, including home crafts, dieting, gardening, cooking, laundry work, care of babies, first aid, etc. And that continued for the next two decades. The canvas broadened a bit then in the 1950s to include sometimes the arts and wider social affairs. For example, there was a programme called Between Ourselves, produced by a woman with the wonderful name of Petronella O'Flanagan. And Petronella, I remember Petronella. It had as one of its regular contributors the eminent writer Kate O'Brien. And then the 1960s brought a weekly series entitled A Woman's World, presented here from Cork by Sheila Ní Vrian, no relation of mine. And although it and, you know, programmes like Between Ourselves, they sound predictably old-fashioned and stuffy and limited in content to us now, they weren't confined to domestic subjects, and they included social, cultural, international affairs. The 50s and 60s, of course, then brought the lunchtime sponsored programmes, and many of those were aimed at the housewife, as she was called then. A standout programme from those years was Dear Frankie, sponsored by Jacob's Biscuits, and again, Rosemary will talk a bit about that. Rules were bent somewhat from the 1950s on to allow the women actors in the radio Éireann Players, who, as far as I know, haven't been mentioned so far in the history of Irish radio. My own mother was a member of the radio Éireann Players from 1949 until she retired in 1986. But they did bend the rules a bit to allow her to stay. They realised that they actually needed woman actors, like, and if they all left at the age of 21, there'd be nobody with an older voice. But they were paid less than men for many years, and there was no such thing as maternity leave. My mother took holiday leave to give birth to me and my two siblings, despite her pleas for more time off, and she had to be back on the air within weeks. And the same applied to several of her female colleagues in the rep. And then the orchestras, the RTÉ Symphony and Light Orchestras, also employed married women, recognising eventually that their talent as musicians did not disappear on marriage. But only after years of battling by the women musicians with their employers and with the Department of Finance. There's very interesting stuff on that on Richard Pine's book on the history of music and radio. I spent a lot of my childhood in and out of the Radio Éireann studios in Henry Street, either accompanying my mother or as a child actress, and later as a part-time continuity announcer when I was a student in my late teens and early 20s. And my memory is that with the exception of my mother's colleagues in the rep, they were all single women or widows, the women I met in the corridors of the GPO. Needless to say, the backroom teams were full of women, providing secretarial, legal, library and other support to programme makers, and nearly all of the technical staff for male, though my aunt was employed as what was then called a balance and control officer in, I think it was the early 60s, but she had to leave when she got married. That was it. That training went to waste. So women who were trying to balance working lives with their roles as homemakers were not catered for in any specific way. Sorry, I'm banging the microphone here. I didn't realise I was doing that. In the first 40 years of radio anyway, women who worked in the broadcasting service were treated as inferior to their male colleagues in terms of pay and conditions. The civil service marriage bar didn't go until 1973, and it was 1981, which is not that long ago, before the report on women in broadcasting formally exposed the terrible imbalance in the employment of women in the station. Now, there were women broadcasters throughout the 60s and early 70s in feature programming, but not in hard news. Olivia O'Leary was the first woman journalist appointed to RT Radio's news features as late as 1972. Until then, the news stories were mediated by men, and there were no women in sport. Current affairs from radio programmes, as opposed to the news division, they began to use more women presenters in the early 70s, and I presented a weekly current affairs programme in Irish on radio in the mid-70s, and several programmes in the features area had women reporters on them. In the main, though, the stereotypical view that the affairs of state were the affairs of men was still firmly reflected in radio broadcasting. And then, as the impact of the women's liberation movement began to be felt in Irish society, that was in the 70s, radio, bit by bit, began to reflect the existence of women in roles other than those of homemaker and housewife. It began earlier, actually, on television, because I worked from the mid-70s as a presenter and a reporter on television features and current affairs programmes, but radio was very slow to catch up. And, like, the voices of Irish women were heard in the streets. They were out there in the streets. They were in the newspapers and, to a certain extent, on television. They were looking for the right to equal pay for equal work, access to contraception and later divorce, representation in political life. It seems so strange now that those things weren't available to women. Issues of concern to women began to creep into the morning radio features programmes. There was one called Day by Day, and I forget the one John Bowman used to present it, and bit by bit there were women involved in that. But eventually, I have to make a big leap here. In 1981, there was a working party on women in broadcasting. Now, the politicians had been fighting for this for quite a long time, and it was the culmination of many years of lobbying by women's groups, politicians, broadcasters as well. The interim report that they published in 1979, that was what led to the invention of the Women Today programme. I won't go into the detail of how it happened, but it was pleading from the outside that caused it to happen. That programme, Women Today, ran in what is now the Liveline slot, more or less, from 1979 to 1985. So it had a big influence over a reasonably long number of years. Marion Finucane was its first presenter, and when she left after 2 years to edit a serious women's magazine called Status, I took over and I was presenter for another 2 years. And then after that, a variety of people held the job until it came to an end. One of the very first programmes dealt with the basic question of whether women ought to be allowed to work outside the home. So that's where we were. Legislation on equal pay had still to come from Europe. Contraception was still illegal. Politics, education, social justice, employment, health, sexuality, sport, the arts, they were all on our agenda, but all examined from a woman's perspective. Women Today urged and encouraged women to talk, and they did. They told stories of the joys and pains of pregnancy and childbirth, the misery of difficult marriages, the exhilaration of sporting achievement, the pleasures and pains of artistic creativity, the frustration of trying to break the mould in male politics, and the delight in succeeding. The unfairness which still caused women to be treated as unequal to men in so many spheres. And they, those women, and the programme were accused of undermining family values, being a danger to society, and of giving scandal. I can't tell you the amount of letters we got from people telling us we were giving scandal, we were just a disgrace, may your arm wither, I remember was one letter I got. Like, terrible, terrible things were to be visited on us for airing these subjects in public. It's so hard to imagine now, but really we didn't talk about anything in Irish society in public. But the programme was also lauded and welcomed by women of all ages in all parts of the country. It gave space to the voices of women on small farms in isolated rural areas, women living with the consequences of unemployment in large urban housing estates, as well as broadcasting the views of articulate, active feminists and of older women whose voices had been silent in public discourse for many years, women who'd stayed at home to raise their families, but whose urge to participate in a wider world was still strong. And to this day, I meet women of my own generation and a bit older saying how they depended on that radio programme every afternoon to kind of open their minds and give them the confidence to go and do things, and they did. The ultimate agenda of Women Today had been to ensure that women's concerns got as much attention as those of men. And by the mid-1980s, that was finally beginning to happen in broadcasting. The mainstream radio programmes now began to handle what would previously have been thought of as women's issues. And those issues were finding their way into political life and public life. In short, I suppose you could say we provided, as indeed RTE is still required to do, a necessary and a much welcomed, if occasionally resisted, public service. So that's the end of what I have to say, and now I will continue. We'll spool back a little bit, because Rosemary, would you tell us a little bit about the very, very early days, and then about Frankie Byrne?
I will, but I'm born disobedient, so I'll start by doing something else. And I'd like to thank you for being a woman who was spearheading what we would today call a movement. It was a movement, the feminist movement in Ireland in the 70s. You were involved in that, and many of the contributors to your programme, younger people will still know their names, Nuala O'Fialan and Nell McCafferty, and people who were all on the contraceptive train, and all the high glory moments, I suppose. But as you said there, just in your last piece, there are many, many women who weren't involved in that, but who were desperate for it, and who got it through the airways. And I think it was a really significant moment in not just in radio history, but in Irish history, in the formation of culture and society, that Women Today came on air and began to explore those issues. And now I'm going to... I'd say everything that you said, I have in the book, and I agree with it, but now I'm going to disagree with some things, just for the sake of a discussion. So the first thing I would say is that we can give out a lot about the past, and I remember Women's Day, and I remember, I come from a family of strong women. I remember as a child in national school marching for things I didn't understand, like equal pay and the right to work. My own mother was desperate always that she had to give up her job in the civil service, and I've talked to many, many others in the same way. But really what we need to maybe look at with the lens of history is to realise that that was society then, and that women internalised the notion that it was right for women to be in the home. We don't have to go as far as Hitler's, 1930s, think of Kinderkirche. We had it here. We had it enshrined in our own constitution in 1937. We can debate whether or not when we had the referendum on it recently, we chose not to change that for all sorts of really interesting reasons, very, very nuanced. And Irish, the history for women is just every bit as complicated as history is in general. So I think we need to be aware that radio is, it's commonplace to say it's a mirror of society, but it absolutely is. So not just in the content that goes out on air, but also in the employment patterns. And I have to say that the same was true, the absence of women was really strong in the pirate radio series. So all my friends who have been enjoying their company for the last day will now turn to me, but there were very few women involved. Commercial radio, community radio, when they got licences in the late 80s, early 90s, the women were mainly working at that time behind the scenes, in admin, in sales. There may have been more women working in stations, but their voices weren't heard on air. They are now, much more so. There's still a way to go. Colleagues in DCU did some really interesting work in 2016, it's 10 years ago now, about women's voices on air, and they said in 2016 that it was 50-50 men to women, but the amount of time that men got to speak, the numbers of men and the numbers of women on air were the same, but the amount of time men got or took to speak was almost 80%. So the women were there. Now, it's not going to happen today. And I think that most of the women in the room, women in radio, are very outspoken, and it's hard to shut us up. And that's a good thing. So I suppose going back to your questions, one of the most famous women in Irish radio is Mairead Ní Gradha, who you mentioned. And I was talking to somebody yesterday who was saying that she will be celebrating, or her 130th anniversary of her birth will be celebrated this year. A very strong, very talented woman. She studied languages under Douglas Hyde in UCD, and she went to work in 2RN. And there was controversy over that. There was controversy because there were two women going for the role of women and children's organisers, herself and one of the Gifford sisters. You'll all remember Grace, just hold me in your arms. One of those sisters, I can't remember her first name.
She became known as
Mrs. John Brennan.
That's right.
Yeah, she used that name. Not Mrs.
No, she called herself John Brennan.
She took a male name so she could write, etc., have her work taken seriously. But anyway, there was controversy over it because both women had served their time in the War of Independence, and Ernest Blythe and J.J. Walsh were fighting over it. It's all reported in Doyle debates, really interesting. For me, what's really interesting is that the men who supported the appointment of a woman who was married, were saying, well, what better woman than a married woman? Because she'd know all about cooking.
We should know all about rearing children. And the irony of it, as Judy Meg has made a great documentary about the same woman, knows is Marie, the brother, had a housekeeper for all her life. And she needed one. She was out working, she was doing a man's job. Marie de Grada, as you said, was the continuity announcer. When the men went home, when Seamus Clandillon and Seamus O'Hay went home at their 9 to 5, because they were from the civil service, she then took up continuity, and most of the radio was at night. And she says in a documentary celebrating 50 years of Irish radio, she says, it's poignant, she says, I was there every Christmas Day for 10 years. And some of you may know her family members were kind of going through an ascendancy really often. It must have been hard. And it was hard, but they did it without complaining. She read the news, she organised the gramophone library, she used to put the records in order, if there was a lull in the schedule, people would run down to the library upstairs in the GPO, the PGO, I was going to say, in the GPO, and grab the records, and they'd say to them, Kitty Evans afterwards, 1 to 20 was played, play 20 to 1, so it won't sound like the same thing. She presented those programmes. She was essentially what we call a DJ, which is one of the jobs today, or one of the better jobs today, shall we say. She did all of that without complaint and without recompense. So like the women you were describing, every woman when she married gave up work officially. So many women who were so talented and so much to offer continued to work. Terry O'Connor, who was the founder of the orchestra, had to come back into tour and Radio Éireann, do the same job, organising the orchestra, playing every night, playing often, it's temporary playing. But now she did it without a pension, she did it without rights, and she did it at less pay. Because in my time, even after 1973, women didn't get equal pay. It took a bit longer for that to come. And as recently, it's not just in radio. It's in, again, come back to that thing of Irish society. It's in society generally. The gender pay gap reports that companies have to file. You know, it's crazy that any company that employs more than 150 people today has to put a return to show how they're addressing the gender pay gap. So there's an acceptance and understanding that it's there. It hasn't gone away. So if we sound like we're whinging sometimes, it's because not everything has been won. A lot of ground has been gained, and it's been gained because of some amazing work by women in the 70s and by women back in the 20s. And I can talk later maybe about women in the 50s, but I want to hand over.
I just want to say, when you spoke about the pirate radio stations being all predominantly male, and I agree they were. I was very lucky in Clonmel. I was in a pirate radio station called CBC, and the station manager there, who also presented a daily chat show, was Peg Power. She was Peg Clancy of the Clancy Brothers fame. Yeah, fantastic woman. And the afternoon show was a solicitor by the name of Patricia Cantwell, who did a talk show, and then I was on after her. So we booked the trend, I have to say, in Clonmel. And it was one of the reasons that I really got into radio, was because I had these great female role models. And another thing that came to mind when you're talking about how things were back in the day, I started the show I'm doing at the moment, Cork Today, is I'm 36 years doing it this year in the same time slot on the same radio station, and we think it's a bit of a record. We can't find anyone else around the country who's doing the same show. But I remember in the early 90s, about 92 I would say, we were famous, or the company was famous, for bringing radio doctors in, and it would be mainly they were English, and an English person would come in, and they'd listen back to an hour of your programme, and then you'd just sit and listen, and they'd do a critique on it and all of that. And I always hated, absolutely always hated. Hated listening back to myself, I think, was a big problem. But I clearly remember a radio doctor coming in, and he said to me, "You've got to listen," because he said, "You're female. People don't like listening to females on radio. You won't have a very long career." That's what I'd love to know. Where is it now? So things didn't change. So while they changed very, very slowly. And we're in a far better place today. I mean, certainly where I work in C103 and our sister station, 96, we're working out of the same building. So we're just down the corridor from each other, which is terrific for broadcasting, I have to say. But I have to say, we are exceptionally well represented when it comes to females, particularly in the day parts on both stations. I think we've got a 50-50 split, males, females. Again, I don't know if that's reflected around the country, but I think we're getting better. We're getting better, and not before time.
Not before time and not before an awful lot of work. That's fascinating about Clonmel, that the three of you are women. I mean, that would have been most unusual.
Listen, absolutely. But then if you think about it, a lot of pirate radio, it was music, so it was DJs, it was the jocks, and they traditionally were the guys. Mm. You know, there wasn't that many female DJs. Again, there's more female DJs now, but certainly back in the pirate days there wasn't.
There was a resistance to them.
Yeah, for sure.
We weren't used to hearing them after all.
That's it.
And Patricia, when it comes to independent radio, since you're there from an independent radio station, do you think that, okay, it's 50-50 in your organisation, what about management and administration and ownership and control? Is that still...
I think in management, like, you know, our company, it's C103 and 96, we're under the ONIC group. And certainly in the ONIC group, we would have a number of females in management and middle management, some very strong women. I can see one of them sitting down there, I won't name her, but a very strong female who's well able. Now, when she goes into management meetings, she's probably the only female in there, but she's well able to be heard. But up and on the line, there are females, because I can see the big boss is down the back trying to hide. So, like, he would know there are females, and they're showing up along the line, there are. And certainly at the very top, there are females. So, and certainly behind the scenes, like a lot of our sales team are.
Well, that was.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a lot of great females in the news department and obviously across the admin.
But you know, Patricia, the way you're saying that, you know, we have, there's a female, yeah. This and there's a female, that.
Yeah.
It's almost like apologising.
It should be a
completely natural thing that both genders are represented.
But isn't it across media? It's just male. It's predominantly male.
Well, now let's go to Deirdre beside you, because
now we'll go to the star of the show.
No, but Deirdre O'Shaughnessy, I know you've done, you think about this a little bit, Deirdre, and do you think, because you're outside the industry in a way, does it have, it would seem to have a better gender balance and better representation of diversity, but is that really the case?
Well, for full disclosure, I previously worked in the same company as Patricia, and most of her colleagues are here, mostly men. So I will say that it has improved dramatically, actually, in the last 10 years. I would have started in 96FM in 2014, and at the time I would say the balance wasn't half as good as it is now. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about today was actually consolidation of ownership, and in some ways that hasn't been a bad thing for gender representation and for equality in DEI more broadly, because you do have things like those gender gap reports, which a small station wouldn't have been obliged to do. Well, they didn't exist then anyway, but a small station wouldn't have been obliged to do that, whereas a conglomerate is obliged to do that. It does matter to their shareholders, and it does matter, you know, in public reports and in newspaper reports and those kind of things. So actually, looking from the outside in now, I would say absolutely there's a far better balance there than there would have been, say, when I was there. In media more broadly, I suppose, I'm coming now from a newspaper, so I've had this curse where when I started in radio, oh, she came from newspapers, she doesn't know anything about this. And then when I went back to newspapers, she came from radio, she doesn't know anything about this. So I don't know anything about anything, but as one of your colleagues said earlier, journalists need to know a lot of small things about a load of different things. So that's my broader area. And I suppose when I went into newspapers, the newsroom set up, again, mirroring the wider social situation, you do have men covering the more manly things a lot of the time, and you do have women in roles who would prefer to be covering some of those things. Our political team is half and half, which is not always the way. You've an awful lot of young female political correspondents now who are really hungry and really, really into their work. The problem is, I suppose, longer term, for those women to stay in those roles, politics isn't family friendly. Covering politics isn't family friendly. Same with crime. You know, the criminals aren't going to adhere to the creche schedule. So those
things. The creche schedule is the responsibility of the men as well, I would have thought.
Well, the creche schedule should be the responsibility of the state, but unfortunately, they've outsourced that as well. Don't encourage me. So to go back to the topic, though, I think the. it is mirroring society largely, Rosemary, and obviously you have waves every generation, I suppose, of younger women coming and going, hang on, this isn't right. And when you mentioned the different waves in the 70s, there was a wave as well, I think, in the 2010s, coinciding with other social movements around repeal, around LGBT rights, and kind of lots of other things that coalesced in a movement called Women on Air, which is kind of forgotten, which is really interesting. It was a brief sort of a flash in the pan for maybe 5 years, quite influential, made a lot of people's lives probably here kind of miserable for a period, agitating and making noise and saying, you know, sending letters to newspapers and sending tweets and whatever, you know, I listened to talk, whatever show, that was a manual, why are there 5 men on talking about anything? You know, unless it's prostate cancer, why are there 5 men talking about the same topic? You know, if it was breast cancer, you'd probably have a man on talking about that because men get breast cancer. So there's really very few topics where there shouldn't be some kind of gender balance. And the Women on Air group, kind of spearheaded by Margaret E. Ward at the time, who is a broadcaster and journalist herself, who was just fed up of listening to this, particularly the more serious topics. I spoke to Margaret actually ahead of coming on this because she's still obviously working in the area. She writes a column for the Irish Times, and she often tackles gender issues in that. But I think it really annoyed her because obviously you'd all these she was listening to all these shows and all the women featured on the shows, so not just presenters, and I think we focus on presenters a lot obviously because that's what is being given to you, but the guests on the shows and the topics. And she said, you know, when are we going to hear a woman on a show who isn't a victim or a carer or you know, somebody asking for something? And that's something actually that really, that had a very profound effect on me as a journalist actually, because I said, okay, how am I framing my stories? And how are producers, who are often female, more often than not actually, how are we framing the stories? And that's something that even if all Women on Air did was to actually give a little reminder to every journalist and every producer every so often, okay, am I looking at this in the correct way? So it's very important. They issued things like an expert list to producers and to radio stations, which had lists of women who could talk about things. And actually, something like that is very useful to a producer or a commissioning editor. I mean, my current role, I ride two horses. I'm a podcaster, but I'm also the opinion editor for print and online. And actually finding women who will write with authority about, for example, NATO. It's difficult, but they do exist. So you do have to go an extra mile to find a female expert on something that is traditionally a male area. But sorry, who's going to be affected more than anyone if all the men of the country are sent off fighting for NATO? Muggins at home. Yeah. So there is, that's the female angle, well, on it, but you don't necessarily need to have that.
Yeah, no. There was an expert list compiled in RTE radio back in the day, a good 20 years ago. But one of the issues, and some producers will still tell you this, that sometimes women are less likely to be fully convinced that they're the right person to be interviewed for such and such. There's a confidence issue there. Whereas men, they find and say, yeah, grand, I'll be in, what time do you want me? And they say, well, you know, can you not find somebody who knows a bit more than I do? Is a more likely response. But that's another day's work. Can I leave you there, Deirdre, for a minute? Because I do want to talk about podcasts. But can we go to Sally and ask you whether, in your experience of, you know, looking back at your own experience in community radio, how has the gender balance thing been?
I think that in general has improved also, as it has improved in all the other media sectors, basically. I think that in the case of community radio, it's a bit different. There is a requirement as part of our license that there should be gender balance on the board of management. In our case, it's a committee of management because we are a cooperative. There is an effort by the committee of management in EFM because they have been training on inclusion and diversity to actually, you know, to be more inclusive, not only from the point of view of women. And women, I think, myself went a bit over this binary approach to gender. Women, men, I think there is a lot more gender diversity, and that's the first step to recognize that, to be accessible and inclusive. Staff-wise, we are a community employment project also, so I think in the past it was easier to have more women, but then the government changed the policy with the double payment, so women have to choose whether to get the parent alone payment or going to community employment, and that actually took a lot of women. And also this applies also to people with disabilities to be able to take part in community employment, which actually is very sad.
Yeah.
And then from a volunteer point of view, because community radio relies a lot on volunteers, like Bernie, for example, and many others. Obviously, we have here also from Radio Nalifa, you know, 80 to 100 people actually volunteering their time to produce radio programs because they love radio, because they love music. But what happened with women? Okay, we really need a systemic change in society. Okay, because we are talking about, yes, gender equality, you know, men are putting their weight behind, but in reality, when it comes to many areas, this is not true. So how is a woman going to go home and say, I need 3 hours every week or 5 hours every week because I want to do a radio program? Okay, what are the support mechanisms for her to be able to own her own time? So I must say I really admire women that volunteer their time to community radio, and also I have to admire also the people that are behind them that recognize that they are allowed to have a life outside that. Okay.
But if there's a structural gap like that thing about not being able to get the community employment scheme is...
Yeah, but not only community employment. This is a kind of very... You know, it's a government side that they only look at numbers in some ways. I think the problem here is society. It's still, you know, there is still a lot of things that need to change, not only on the brain of men, but also on the brain of women. And I think media is a way to actually, I don't want to patronize anyone, but to educate society in how this change should be. I was recently on Monday in an event that was about with the local women refuge, and they have done an exhibition with photographs and the testimony of women, and ERFN collaborated by producing the audio piece that goes with it. And one of the things that they mention is that the main problem that they have actually to combat violence against women, gender-based violence, is that really is still being seen as a women's problem. But really the problem here are not the women, are the men. Okay? So this is something that media should start changing the discourse. We need to subvert that narrative. Sorry, I'm a bit of a feminist. Inclusive feminist is a dirty word also. You know, but yes, I think that's the main problem. We really need to change not only the stories we are telling, but also how we tell those stories.
Very good point. I saw you nodding your head.
I'm dying to jump in there because I agree with you, Sally. And I think it comes back to the idea of perception and attitudes and values, which change very slowly. So we're looking at 100 years. If we look back, attitudes and values as to women's roles, you know, have changed. I think it was Eddie Bowen said earlier on that women's voices were prized at the very beginning of radio because they were seen as higher, and they could travel further on the frequencies and people couldn't get them on this crystal set. But very quickly, when the technology changed, women's voices were devalued and put away. There was a fear, not just in Ireland, but in broadcasters all over Europe anyway, of state broadcasters, that women shouldn't read the news because they might get emotional and hysterical, they might break down.
Mm.
Well, they might be very affected when they hear that somebody has died. So they couldn't be trusted to do that. So I think a lot of those things have gone and changed. And
but it took time.
Yeah. But I would say that in terms of attitudes and values and perceptions, getting women to talk on air is difficult, and it is to do with confidence. But that's a wider societal issue. That's much bigger. As somebody who came from the convent, you know, I came up here with my notebook, God love you, because I had so many things that I said, I better remember to say that. I'm enjoying the conversation now, so I'm only going to draw on one thing. And it comes back to the 1950s. I think that just because we put more women on air doesn't mean that we hear women's voices or a woman's perspective. T.G. Carr have the mana sul ele, because coming from another language, they're looking at things in a different way. Putting a woman on air if she's going to be saying, or, you know, trotting out the party line or whatever isn't going to work. The radio programme that I'm referring to was an experiment, sort of lasted for a good long while. It was a series on Radio Air, and it was called The Women's Magazine. It went out on different nights. It was edited, which means produced, by a woman, Irene French. It was presented by women, Una Huerta and Peg Monaghan.
This was in 1950s.
1951 it started, and it ran for a few years. But it was a really good case. You can get the scripts in UCD's archives of seeing how, and I mean, I'm old enough to remember thinking that, you know, maybe a woman shouldn't work, you know, if her husband had a good salary, why should she be taking a job from a man? I'm shocked to say it, but I do remember thinking that when I was a teenager, because it was the way, it was the norm of what we thought. So just because women are there doesn't mean that they're really shifting things. You know, we're all in this together. And we all want to move forward to a better place for everyone. And men have definitely come a long way with us, and we all need to move forward again. So when you hear this from 1951, I think it's just amazing. Two things. This was seen as humour, read by women, and a programme produced by women, for women, but actually you have to say to yourself, who was really for? Women might have been listening. So it's two voices. Voice one says, in China they drive down the centre of the road. Question is, what happens when two women drivers meet going in opposite directions? And then voice one says, a cure for talkative wives was found. One practiced by one tribe of Africans. So let's get racism in here. The day of the wedding, the bridegroom poured a handful of pebbles, each the size of a pea, into the bride's mouth. She never removed them again, whether eating, sleeping, talking or drinking. I didn't think I was going to get upset. Those pebbles remained. We know that's not true. But it went out on the air as if it was true, and it went out as humour. And this is the thing about, sorry, I'm shouting now, attitudes and values don't come, you know, in the catechism that we were taught. They come in the things that we accept when we're relaxed. They come in the things we laugh at. They come in the things, as you said, Patricia, that are the norm. The other thing, I suppose, is that, you know, the position, I suppose, of privilege, really, of Radio Éireann and of... you know, people who were on a good salary in the civil service and who were living in a good, thank you very much, living in a wealthy part of Dublin, and who often forgot, I think, that there were listeners all around the country. So in this particular piece from Women's Magazine, it's some advice to women as to how to improve their lives. And it says, talking of relaxation and leisure hours, in most cities there are old houses where rooms could be converted into playrooms for the children. Like the new movement going on in Norway. Old unused parlours, which were just gathering dust and smelly, musty, have been turned into a playroom for children and adults too by Norwegian mothers. Out went the plush furniture, the stuffy chairs, and in came a long games table, sturdy chairs, toys and books. In the evening, after the youngsters have gone to bed, the parents and their guests sit there to chat or play cards, achieving a double purpose. This enterprise provided a comfortable space for relaxation and playing, and it helps the family, happily occupied at home, not looking for outside entertainment. If you just take those few sentences and think of all of the values, where were the mothers of 10 and 14 in the tenements? Where were the women rearing huge families on farms and trying to manage? Who was speaking to them? Who was reinforcing the way that they saw their lives? You talked there about, you know, women saying to you in the 70s, you know, 20 years later, how it was like you didn't use the word lifeline, but it was like a lifeline to hear these topics. So we have a duty, I think, broadcasters have a duty to throw out those lifelines.
And can I just say, I remember back in the 90s, Colm O'Connell, would have been the station manager at Lord of Mercy, is no longer with us at the time, and I remember he was saying, you know, he'd been listening to my programme, and he said, you need to have more female voices on. You know, all the politicians were male, and anyone, you know, any organisation that I was talking to, it was always a male they were putting forward. And I remember saying desperately, well, you know, you contact an organisation and they'll always put forward, the CEO is always a male, you know, it's always going to be a man that's going to come forward. But I have to say that has changed. It's like certainly in the last 10 years, I could go through a whole programme where all of the guests might have been female, not deliberately, but it's just that's the way it felt. You know, it might have been a female politician or a female councillor or some organisation, someone I was dealing with, and it was a female was put forward. So we are getting... It is getting better.
I think we're all agreed that it's getting better, but one of the things we need to talk about, and I can't believe how fast the time is going, is the question of podcasts.
Because there are, well, as far as I'm concerned, there are too many podcasts out there. I just can't follow them all, and a lot of them really interesting, and a lot of them a complete load of rubbish as well. But you know, navigating that minefield of podcasts is a problem. Deirdre, you do a podcast now. It's quite a specific one, but give me a view of podcasting and women and what it's used for. And
it's okay. I suppose there's a PhD in that, but I suppose, as to the too many podcasting, I 100% agree with you. When they asked me to do the podcast in the exam, I said, does anyone really need another podcast?
Yeah.
And then I said, yeah, of course I do, yeah. But
and it's very good.
And thank you. And you should all subscribe. That's why I'm here. You all need to subscribe. But I suppose that is a thing. But actually, if you look back at every form of media when it was new, right, when the printing press was invented and then when people had access to the printing press, every Tom, Dick and Harry with a few quid in his pocket was printing his own flyers. My great-grandfather printed pamphlets, I didn't lick it off the floor, about women's health, which he knew absolutely nothing about, and distributed them and got people to pay for them. People, whenever there was a new form of media that was accessible and affordable and cheap, and people felt they could get their message out without being mediated by somebody else, they did it. So you had that with the printing press, you had it with the pirate radio stations, now you have it with podcasts, you had it with blogs, you had it with Twitter. That's what people do when they're given a new platform. And the way I see it, I think podcasts have already started now to go the same way as the others in terms of there's a new one springing up every probably minute somewhere, but some of them will survive and most of them won't, and that's the way all of these things go. Some of them will be viable, most of them won't. Some people will have a commitment to it and have a love for it and want to keep going and find an audience. Most of them won't. And what's happening, I think, in that now is that the old media, like ourselves, like the radio stations, like RTE, are seeing opportunities there either for themselves to bring their content to a new audience on a different platform, bringing the content to where the audience is,
yeah.
Rather than having the audience, you know, switch on the radio or whatever it is, you know, they have their phone in their hand, send it to them there. We're all in the business of content, and I suppose that's why, for me, the whole radio, television, social media, newspaper thing is not, we're all in the same business of telling stories.
Mm.
And as long as the stories are well told and well sourced and properly stood up and all of that, all of those fundamental tenets of journalism, the story should be provided to people wherever they will find it.
Yeah, it is ownership in the podcast world now. Is that likely to create a problem?
You see, I think what's happening now, again, in the same way, is that you have this consolidation. So, again, the likes of Onik and the likes of the bigger platform owners, Bauer, all of them, are seeing opportunities in independent podcasts. They're bringing them in. And what a lot of the independent podcasters work together, so they guest on each other's podcasts. They do all the same things traditional media does in terms of partnerships, because those are the things that work. So you have, this podcaster guesting on that podcast to bring them a new audience, and that's how they bring in all these new listeners, and eventually that is going to lead to consolidation. And you have the likes of Bauer bringing in independent people, providing them with production studios, providing them with branding and making them part of their stable, and essentially they're bringing them into the fold in the same way that they would have brought in presenters before. In large part, maybe they don't have to pay them. Sometimes there's kind of a profit share. It seems to work differently. The deals seem to be different for everybody depending on their numbers, but it is all being consolidated in. If they're seeing quality, they're seeing an audience, and they're seeing a brand that is likely to succeed, they're bringing them in.
And is that a bad or a good thing for women?
I think it'll probably just end up being the same thing for women as you're seeing in the industry generally. I do think what podcasting has done, it the same way social media, look at the likes of Billie Eilish, who is no longer a new star, but she found her audience, I think, on YouTube originally. You have a lot of people now who have found an audience on TikTok first. The likes of, say, James Patrice, right? James Patrice, who most people will know. James Patrice started off, I think, on TikTok, Instagram. Now he's on the RTE Today Show regularly. He's on Dancing with the Stars. Talent will find its way in some way, and these new platforms are ways for people to find. They're like another way of auditioning, you know. So I think the industry is starting to get to grips with that and to bring them in. There's always going to be some outside challenge to the industry or some new thing, and it's a question of adapting to run with it rather than being afraid of it and running away from it.
Okay. Yeah, and we podcast our shows every day, and certainly I would find the following day. You've got a new, you've got an extra audience at night who are listening to the podcast when it goes out. I think it goes out at I should know this. I think it goes out at 10 o'clock. So it goes out for 2 hours at 10 o'clock at night. The following day, I will always have emails in from somebody saying, cut the program overnight, cut the podcast overnight. So we're getting a different audience at night as well, because, you know, there are people at work that can't always listen to the radio during the day, but want to listen, and they'll get it in the podcast. So it, you know, it can benefit live radio as well.
Yeah. What I'm wondering is, and time is running very short, but whether things that concern women are getting more airtime, if you like, as a result of podcasting than they would have done through traditional media.
Yeah, I suppose one of the things is that there's a podcast for everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, for everything, and multiple ones of them. I mean, I don't know how many millions of parenting podcasts there are, or birth story podcasts there are, or, you know, every sort of a niche thing you can imagine, there's a podcast for it. You know, we the Irish Examiner actually did one with Anne-Marie O'Connor, a Parkinson's podcast. You know, so there is one for everything, and I suppose that's the beauty of a medium like that, where you can provide something for a very niche audience, and the cost base is much lower.
Thank you all. I'm sorry, but the time is nearly gone, but we'll take one or two questions, if there are any in the audience.
Just following on from Rosemary, who said first about it was a society on air and broadcasting. It was, but I think that lets the politician, J.J. Walsh, who was the minister when all of this began 100 years ago, a decade later referred to women saying their poisonous fangs were everywhere in evidence at the foundation of the state. He was writing to advise the Taoiseach on rolling back the wheels of the women's movement when the constitution was being written in 1937. So I think the confluence of politics and broadcasting mustn't be forgotten. Ireland is still number 103 on the global list for women in parliament, and the Women on Air is still going strong. It's now run by Roisin Duffy, news editor in RTE, and she and I did some work with getting women in politics, getting women to run for election, actually, training them with me last year for the local elections and the national and European. And I just think to have a situation where we don't have to talk about, you know, on a forum like this, women in broadcasting, where it's just the norm, we need to look at politics as well.
That's yeah, and actually, it just brought to mind, there was a golf course, will remain nameless, in the county, who in the 70s decided that they would allow women to become members, and it's in the minutes that it was agreed they'd allow them to join. Wouldn't they be great to be able to make the tea and the sandwiches?
Yeah. Well, thank God, I think that has changed, because no woman would put up with that.
Can
now.
I add something? I think it's important that women run for election, but let's see what policies they are defending. Because let's remember May Harney, the first thing she wanted to do was to cut back on the child benefit for single women. Okay, because basically they were milking the system from her point of view. So you have very clear examples that really sometimes it's not women, it's the policy, and for media is who is doing the script, who is selecting what is the news. Okay, all that have to change.
Just on that, the poison, the quote about women, the poisonous fouls, that wasn't unusual. And politics is part of society, is part of culture. It's all the one. Radio isn't standing out on its own. Politicians aren't standing out their own. And we elect them. And we choose what we listen to, too. I mean, radio is driven by listenership figures. So there is a responsibility on both sides. We need to change society. And I agree that it's a shame that year after year after year we have these kind of fora and we talk about women as being essentially different or something, as if we're, you know, a different species. And it was a pity yesterday when Sarah McInerney was talking, you know, that it was Sarah as a woman as opposed to Sarah as a journalist. And that's something that we need to move away from. And we're all guilty and responsible for that. So particularly to younger people in the room, I mean, you have to continue.
not the fight, but the gentle persuasion and change things, absolutely.
Rosemary, just quickly, and from the academic sense, I'm just wondering with MIC, what are the ratios of young men and young women going to study media? Like, is it much more male-dominated of people going to study it? And if so, what is that because you think the field is not a path for them, or and how do you encourage more? You don't have to study to work in radio, but you know, obviously some will have an intention to if they are. So
it's predominantly female, majorly so, I would say 80%, 75%. And Jackie Hurley will be here later on, and she was in a class I taught when I said to them, look at who's sitting beside you. You know, you're all in fourth year, and you all know in those days you could publish who came first and, you know, who came last or whatever. It was put up on the wall. And I said, just look at it and see. And they were all looking around, and the girls were delighted with themselves because they work hard and they, you know, understand what's been asked of them, and they'll fill in the boxes, etc. And we need both types, right? But anyway, and I said, and look at the guys, I said, beside you as well. And I hadn't said who'd come first or whatever. They knew. I said, he's going to be your boss in 10 years' time if you've got a job. And they didn't like it, but it made some of them buck up. And it's changing, but they're predominantly women. But women are, it's not that we're taking over. Women are everywhere. We always have been. Now they're in better jobs and better ways. You look at, you know, the head of audio in RTE, the head of so many radio stations. You look back to the early days of commercial radio when you had the likes of Fiona Stack is in the room, and Bernadette Gallagher and yourself and Sue Nunn and others. There were always really good, strong women. But it's just that there needs to be normalised. Like, yeah, the first thing you said to make it the norm. Sorry, then. All right, I just want to take the final question.
Just a question about social class and migrant women. Do the panel feel that there's for much in Ireland and traditional women from more working class backgrounds to have a voice?
We in the EFM, obviously, we are in a working class neighbourhood in Coolock. Probably you know Coolock because of the bad news, okay? But it's really a very vibrant neighbourhood with lots of community organisations, voluntary groups, etc., etc. So it's great. We have working class women presenting programmes in EFM. We have, I remember a few years back, we have this guy who kept calling and saying, you need to get that woman to get speech classes because has a very strong North Dublin accent. So that's one issue, okay? At the moment, for example, in EFM, we have one of the flagship programs, if you wanted to call like that, is the Current Affairs program. It runs from 11 to 1 p.m. Monday to Friday. We have 6 presenters, and 4 of them are women, and 3 of those women are migrant.
Great. One of the things that seems to me, and just an answer to your question, is that it takes us a while on our ear to get used to either a different accent, a very strong accent, say, from some other part of Ireland, and people complain about certain people, God, your man's accent, I can't stand it, you know. And look, we have to just get used to it. And equally with migrant people of both genders, there's an increase both of migrants and of people from diverse backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds of all kinds, whether they're migrants or not. And we're not used to hearing their accents on the radio. So I think we should have more of them, because the more there are on, the more it will, that terrible word, normalise our ears, that we can begin to say, it doesn't seem odd to us. At the moment it seems odd. And I know that in defence of RTE that they've done work in that area on both radio and television, but there should be more of it.
Can I say one last thing about that? I was in a human rights conference quite a few years back. There was someone from BBC, and she was saying, it's a pity that there is all these human rights defenders, but they don't speak English. So, and I said, but you can get someone from the conference to translate for you. And yes, then obviously you have to do more editing then to superpose the translation to the person speaking, blah, blah, blah. But basically a lot of the stories are not being told because we can't be bothered because people have a different accent or it's too difficult.
Yeah, but there are imaginative.
And they are very important stories.
Just on that, sorry, because I think actually unfairly that lands on community radio to actually do that work. The rest of us probably do need to step up on that, definitely. It's something we're very conscious of. I think the migrant issue is in some ways a lag, because we haven't caught up with the fact that the country is completely different to what it was 10 years ago. Obviously there was always some migrants, but now we have this massive population that in large part isn't being catered to, and I don't think a lot of them are listening or watching Irish broadcast. I think, say my Irish people, my friends in London all listen to, you know, Brendan O'Connor every weekend. So I think that's something that actually we need to be focusing on a bit more specifically. And I think the class thing is not a lag, and there's no excuse for it, and it's a question of us doing the work to find people. Again, as a commissioning editor, when you're talking about finding people to write things and all of that, like, lived experiences is the best testament of anything, either on broadcast or in print, and it is about us going finding people a lot of the time. You know, we can go to an NGO and say, oh, who do you know that does this or that volunteers for whatever, and that's usually the way we do it, but then you're getting sort of a very sanitised version of this is the NGO's best girl or best boy that they put forward for everything. That's not the same thing as going out and actually meeting people and finding them, so it's up to us to do that work, really. Yeah.
And encouraging people and helping them, because what we want to hear is the content, not the voice. And if something is coming between you and the content, and it could be through the accent or the unfamiliarity with English, look, I will die if I don't get a coffee. Thank you all very much.